Hello, everybody, and welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm extra crispy.
Yeah. Oh, bad taste. Bad form.
What? Well, bad taste. I don't know if they tried her afterwards, but I just...
Oh, my gosh.
They were out of food.
It was. I mean, you got to eat.
Oh, that's horrible.
Maybe that's what soldiers were thinking.
Well, if they did, I hope they get grayscale. That's just horrible.
Hey, I didn't do it.
Yeah, talk about it. That was haunting. I'm sorry. Like that gave me like nightmares, that whole scene.
Before we start, what do you think about people still saying it's too violent, too much sex and violence? Did they not see the pilot episode of Game of Thrones?
Well, and this is the thing, is that it's always, this show has been that, and I think even George R. R. Martin said it, that this is supposed to be representing a more less civilized period of time. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but I've heard that this is somewhat loosely based on the War of Roses.
Yes.
So it's that time period. So it is, the things that happen are reminiscent of that time.
Yeah. The Lannister and Stark rivalry is basically the War of the Roses, and I think he bases Dany off of Elizabeth I. So. Just the solitary queen, that has to find her destiny, kind of thing.
Again, I agree with people who are saying the Ramsay rape of Sansa was probably over the top, unless it leads to Theon becoming a human again.
Right. But, I already had this. I mean, this season, I agree with it, with a lot of people and their objections, because a lot of times it seems to me that the writers of the show are really being lazy writers, and they're doing a lot of things just for shock value.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because like the books are usually really slow burning, and it builds to this, to where when you get there, you're either prepared for it or it's like, oh my gosh.
Right.
But yeah. With Ramsay raping Sansa, I was explaining this to someone, I think on y'all's message boards, to where Theon disappears at the end of book two. And you don't read about him in book three or book four. And then when you get back to him in book five, he's only referred to as Reek. His chapters are called Reek, not Theon. So yeah. you don't realize that it is Theon until a few chapters into his story, where you're like, oh my gosh, this is Theon, and he's alive. And everything that you've read has been either hearsay from other people or kind of a flashback, very bland storytelling of how he was tortured. So you don't really, that Ramsay's evil, but you don't know how evil he is. And so when you actually get to the rape of Jane Poole, you're really seeing Ramsay for who he is. Like, oh my gosh, he just took this girl, this innocent girl, and just raped right in front of Theon, and insists that Theon do evil things to her too. So it's a really big shock in the book, whereas in the show, they've already shown Theon being tortured by Ramsay, so you already see the monster that he is. And so the rape of Sansa now is not as shocking as it should be. So
it's not even necessary, really. Yeah. And I think that's the argument, is it even necessary?
And I agree with that. I think we said at the time, I agree with that 100%, unless it leads to Theon becoming Theon again.
Yeah.
Unless that pushed, but we haven't seen it, so it's like, okay, I didn't need to see this to make... To see that Ramsay's a bad guy. I already hate him. There's nothing that's gonna turn me around to say, okay, this Ramsay guy, he's got hope.
So Nick, now the thing you just said about the slow burn, it seems like a lot of the people that I know that are fans of the books, have read the books, have been upset with this season, in the sense that's the argument that I hear, is like the books are such a great slow burn. It leads to, these big things that happen, and this season they feel like there was just kind of meandering, didn't really go anywhere, and just like boom, stuff started happening. It just didn't lead to where we're at right now. Me as a viewer, I don't feel as conflicted, or like I've enjoyed the story and everything like that. But have you felt the same way? Or
yeah, I felt the same way. And it's I have always been on. I try my best to always separate books from shows. And this season, though, when they are getting into the ripple effect, is what George R. R. Martin calls it, and them actually writing things that he hasn't written yet, or at least he has told them about, they're kind of just lumping it in at their convenience. And in some cases, they're going out of their way to cut out interesting storylines, and then they put in a really lame version of it. Mm-hmm. Or or like, I mean, I'll talk in the book discussion about Stannis, because that really fired me up. No pun intended. And then even with Dany in the Dragon Pit scene, it is the setting and the outcome is still the same, but in the book it's way more interesting to me in some elements of it. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a lot more stuff to go with Stannis too, and it's just like, hey, the writers deliberately went out of their way to make that with Stannis happen, and to me it would have been just as fine to leave it the way the book happened. Mm-hmm. But and so it just makes people mad. It's like, why did you do this? Why did you butcher a character? And I'm talking about Shrey, I'm talking about Stannis. Like, why did you change his motivation as a character, and now you can't root for him whatsoever? Because there's a lot of people out there that are rooting for Stannis to be king. I mean, not if not the final king, at least for a king for a time. And now you can't even root for him on the show because
there's no way.
Yeah. So.
Now, do you think the writers were under pressure because it's the ninth episode and everything? There's always a shock value. There's always something shocking that happens.
But for this episode, the ninth episode, quote unquote, was, you know, the fighting pits. That was the big.
Right.
I guess, but it wasn't like, I mean, I think we all knew the dragon was going to show up. I said to myself, like, okay, where's that dragon?
I said it'd be cool if the dragon showed up. I wasn't like...
Because I said either the dragon shows up or the shocking death is all these main characters we like die.
Which it could be.
Which could happen, but it didn't. So there wasn't like, oh my God, that happened. You're not going to have people... I don't think you have... You know how they have people watching the Red Wedding for the first time they're filming, and people go, oh! Have you seen that on YouTube? And you see the different things that happen, like even mm-hmm. season one with Ned Stark. You see these. Nobody's like going, "Oh, the dragon's here! Oh my God!" Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't.
Well, let's get into the actual recap of the episode, and we'll discuss this episode further.
Okay.
But let's start it off with Stannis' camp getting snowed in, and our favorite character Melisandre staring into the fire. and she kind of thinks something's going on, and believe it or not, Ramsay is successful in kind of causing chaos and you know, pushing Stannis further into.
Well, if she saw it, why didn't she say something?
Well, she got a glimpse of it in the fire, and you know, she said that she's seen a victory in the flames, and she, you know, maybe she just didn't know what was going on. And then went outside and was like, "What the heck?" You know, and then everything just exploded.
Or maybe she just wanted to keep the option open to burn someone later on.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, I'll get into that in the book section. But did y'all notice, though? I thought it was really strange when they zoom out and they show the whole camp, that almost all the camps, the tents just go, they basically light up all at the exact same time.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really strange, too, because you don't see anyone running around those tents. I was like, are these people ninjas? Like, just, I didn't.
No, the others.
No, he did say he only needed 20 good men, not mediocre men. So,
well, what was more upsetting, the burning of the child or burning of a horse?
Yeah, I know. Like, you do feel sorry for him. He was a pretty skinny horse, though. So,
yeah, I guess so.
Horse meat, though, really tasty.
That's why I mentioned the child, because they did eat the horses. So,
let's move on. I'll venture into that. So, you know, next morning, Davos is kind of filling in Stannis what's going on, and Stannis is as, you know, direct as ever.
Yeah, I mean, Davos is informing him that we lost all of our food, we lost all of our siege weapons, that we're in a bad situation. Of course, Stannis, who's someone who has very little sympathy, just orders all of the guards to be chained up, because either they were asleep or they're aiding the enemy, find out the truth, and then hang them. So he really inspires his soldiers to want to be guards, you know. It's like,
what? Well, and plus, if you're losing, because they've already had a lot of deserters.
Yeah.
Why would you kill more soldiers?
That's just the way he is. I mean, it's the same as like with Dave. You know, why he's only got nubs for fingers. You know, it doesn't matter how good a job you do. If you broke the law, then you're gonna.
Yeah, I get it, but it's just at a certain point you got to go, okay, I'm running out of people.
Yeah.
I just thought it was odd.
It is odd. Yeah. It is. I guess what the directors, what the writers of the show are trying to show is that Stannis has crossed that, especially towards the end of the episode, he's crossed that line now where he doesn't care. You know, it's just,
win at all costs, basically.
Yeah, win at all costs, yeah. And if, either I'm going to have devoted people and lose or not. So he just sees it as weakness, is the people who are failing him. So.
Yeah. So then John is marching with the wildlings back to the wall, and Alistair Thorne pauses, but then opens everything up.
Yeah, this scene is the only scene show-wise that I went, this is dumb. This is just a dumb scene. Because it makes no sense whatsoever. Because John was on the boats. They got all the people on the boats from Eastwatch by the Sea. Why wouldn't you just bring the boats back to Eastwatch by the Sea and then walk on the other side of the wall instead of walking through White Walker territory on the north side of the wall? It made no sense whatsoever. It's like, oh, okay.
It's more visually appealing if they go to the wall.
Yeah.
Well, did he look disappointed when he looked down and saw Jon Snow was alive?
Well, he looked disappointed. Period. So
he's just nah.
Because he doesn't want to let the wildlings in. You know, none of them do. But he does give in though and say, okay, open the gates. And then, you know, and of course, then he gives John some encouragement.
Yeah.
You know, you have a good heart, but you're going to get us all killed. But it just, that just made no sense to me for them to be on that side of the wall, because it's a really long walk. So it's like, why would you? It made no sense. If you look at the map of above the wall where Hardhome is and where they are, I didn't understand it.
What about people like me who have not seen the map?
You haven't looked at the map?
It's the beginning of every episode.
I know that, but I just listen to the music.
yeah.
I do listen to the whole – it's one of those shows that you listen to the whole theme song. But I don't like how some of the parts have changed because they've made it longer. You know, there used to be a part where they go up anyway, go move on.
Because they show the different locations that are in.
I know, but it's just – there's certain things where the song used to be – the first season it was better.
The way it's the same song, but
no, it's the same song, but the different. There's different.
The pictures. You like the pictures better?
No, there's different. Like when they, move on. There's something that's it has changed
The scenes were prettier. I like the scenes better.
No,
the
it's just like
season.
When it goes up the elevator. It's with the music. It's not the same.
It was real pretty when they went out the first time. But
all right, I'm done because I don't have my. I think it's because I don't have my microphone because the producer. I'm supposed to have a microphone here, and I don't have one.
He misses Winterfell on fire too.
Yeah. All right, yeah. It has that smoke on there. It's real nice.
All right, he's having a barbecue.
Barbecue. Now that's Stannis again.
Yeah.
Well, Stannis and Theon, at least, you know, we're starting to see some, like, things here.
Okay.
Anywho, we then go to Stannis, who summons Davos, and he says, Davos has to go back, get some men and food from Jon Snow.
Yeah, the first thing I was drawn to is it opens up on Stannis looking at the map, and you can see where his soldiers are in position to Winterfell. He has to look pretty closely, but it seems that Stannis' army is on the north end of Long Lake, which is about halfway between Winterfell and the Wall. Mm-hmm. So he's still got a good ways to go before he gets to Winterfell.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, yeah. We know you can't read a map. It's okay.
I can read a map. No.
But I like the song. It's pretty nice.
That's why I got it at GPS.
Turn left. There's a lake there. Turn left.
No, you're good. It's up there. The left. It's telling me to go left.
Stannis tells Davos that he's going to send him to Castle Black to command Jon Snow to send food supplies and fresh horses.
Why me? Why don't you send someone else? And I thought Stannis came back with a pretty good answer.
Yeah, he did. He did. And even the deal that he offers John is pretty good, but it still depends on if he actually takes King's Landing and becomes king of resupplying.
Well, he's sending him away for another reason, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He already knew in his mind what he was going to have to do. And he's sending Davos away because he knows that Davos would most likely stand in his way or even maybe kidnap Shireen to take him away from Stannis. And I actually kind of thought that's what he was going to do when he decides to leave the Stannis' tent. I was like, oh, good, go get her and just run away with her. But
I kept waiting for him to show up.
Yeah.
but that didn't happen.
Yeah, but even says like, hey, you know, let me take Shireen back to the wall. This is no place for, you know, a young princess.
Nope, I need her here.
Yeah, my family stays with me.
Yeah, so then we have a very sweet scene between Davos and Shireen and ring the Dance of Dragons, and he gives her a nice carved stag.
Yeah, there's it's kind of a little bit of a, in both times that she talks about the Dance of Dragons, there's kind of a little foreshadowing in both of these scenes where she's going, you know, I'm reading the Dance of Dragons, and then when she says to Sir Davos, she's like, you know, Byron Swan was burned alive by a dragon. So you're like, oh, that's sad. but yeah, he gives her a stag, and then as a thank you to for teaching him how to read, and that he wants to know all about it when he gets back.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what will happen, though, when he does find out.
Yeah.
I think he kills Stannis.
You wonder if he'll still be his man after this, because he's always been such a loyal. Yeah.
There's just no way. I think that everyone has their breaking point, and I think that's it.
Yeah, because you think about it, like, Davos lost all of his sons fighting for Stannis.
Right.
And the only thing he had left now as a father figure was a father figure to Shireen, and now she's dead. Right. So, yeah, I could easily see that be the breaking point.
And not just dead, killed in a horrible way.
Yeah.
Just a horrible way. And I think it's his breaking point. I think this is the end of Stannis.
Mm-hmm. We then go to Jaime, going back to Dorne. Mm-hmm. And he is brought before Dorne and Azaria.
Yeah, and Princess Marcella and Prince Trystane.
Mm-hmm.
And Dorne, you know, you can see how wise he is. I mean, some people would call him making foolish decisions, but I think he's really smart. And that's what he says. He inquires like any person would, like, why did you sneak into my country to steal the princess back without even asking me? Of course, when Jaime then says, like, I received a threat of the necklace and the snake, to which Dorne obviously just looks over at Ilaria and knows that she did it.
She also gave the guilty look too, so that made it a little easier.
It's not a good poker face, but no. Poker face.
No. Who, me?
Yeah. But you get. Oh, go ahead.
No, go.
I was saying, yeah. Then Jaime gets some food, to which he assumes it's going to be his last meal because, you know, he shouldn't be there anyway. But Dorne, yeah, is really nice and really smart and says, "No, I'm not going to kill you. I don't want war. I've seen all the tragedies of it." So he instead just says, I propose a toast to King Tommen. May his rule be nice and long. And they all drink to him except Ilaria again. Yeah, to which he pours her drink on the floor in defiance.
And that just makes a mess for someone to have to clean up.
Exactly.
That just irritates me.
It's all sticky.
Yeah, it's just gross.
But even then, Dorne agrees to send Marcella back. I thought that was interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the betrothal must stand.
Yeah, Patroma sends back Trystane and Oberyn's place on the small council, which is another brilliant thing, too, because he wants Dorne to have some power and decisions.
Yep.
Now the kingdom is going to rule. Just think about it. If something happens to Tommen, then she would be the new queen, supposedly, even though the male heir in Westeros is always the stronger claim. But then Trystane could be the king, but that she would rule, not him. Mm-hmm. So, what else can
you
go?
Well, so, Jaime agrees, and then Ilaria leaves, kind of, you know, with a huff and a puff. and our good friend Bronn, you know, what's his fate? And Trystane agrees.
Well, Jaime asks, what about my man?
Yep, and Trystane says, there would be one condition, which we'll find out later. That's why I was like, what is he going to do? Is it going to be like a Tyrion type of thing, you know, chop off his manhood, what's the deal?
Well, that's the question that he asks is, how do they punish people in King's Landing for striking a prince, which it's always they cut off the hand. That's the law in Westeros, is if you hit any kind of royalty, then you lose the hand that touched the royalty. At least that's the way it was in the Targaryen age. So we go down and we visit Bronn, and he says goodbye to the most beautiful woman in the world. And,
she may not be in the world, but I think she's really sexy. I'm just going to say it. Very cute girl.
She's a cutie, yeah. I wouldn't kick her out of bed.
No.
So,
I mean, sure, not as beautiful as my wife, the most beautiful woman in the world, but still.
Nice.
Very pretty.
Nice. She might not be as hot as some of the other women on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, but still too soon.
Oh. It's horrible.
I didn't burn her. You keep acting like I'm the one that set the fire to her.
So you're saying she's not smoking hot.
She's hot. Yeah, she's hot.
Oh, you guys are all going to hell. I'm just saying it right now. You're all going to hell.
I didn't write the show. I just podcast about it.
Oh, my God. But yes.
Someone had to say it because I know there's some listeners out there thinking it. So
listen, that's fine.
I'm saving them from having to say it so they can sleep at night.
Your claim to the Entertainment Podcast Award and being the entertainment stands true.
There you go. Someone has to do it.
Bron, the deal is that it's the old elbow in the face.
That was a good shot.
Yeah, good shot. Yeah, I would have thought it would have busted his nose.
Yeah. But Bron, I think, has pretty, cement head. Who knows?
Well, it looks like his nose has been broken a few times anyway.
Yeah.
We then go to Arya, who seems to be working out her plan to kill the skinny man. And she's selling her oysters, clams, and cuckolds.
Cuckolds! Yeah, I just love the way she...
What are the cuckolds?
I don't know.
We figured it out?
No.
Oysters, clams, and cuckolds.
It just sounds gross. I'm sorry. It doesn't sound inviting.
You don't want to...
Cuckold!
You can't help but laugh every time she says it,
she
though.
Does, but it's just like she gets a Cockney accent for some reason when she says it. It's like,
oysters, clams, and cuckolds.
But then she sees one of the people that's on her list, Mr. Mace Tyrell.
Oh, yes. Yeah, she just walks.
Sorry, I'm sorry, Marion Trant, right?
Marion Trant, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, she sees Lord Tyrell, too, but I don't think she knows who he is. But, yeah, like, she walks just right past the gambler, the skinny man, as he's just yelling, I want my oysters, girl! Come on!
I want my cuckoos!
Go!
But, yeah,
I'm busy!
She spots Marin Trant, though, and as they are greeted, Trant and Lord Tyrell are greeted by the bank of Braavos, and Arya follows them to the bank, watching their every move.
She's almost like Magnum in a Ferrari, red Ferrari. Like, how do you not see her?
Yeah. And the bright red shirt and the Detroit hat.
Well, Trant's like kind of looking at her and kind of seeing her.
Well, now we know why, though.
Yeah, exactly. You're not quite – after you know why, you're like, is he looking at her because he thinks he recognizes her or because he thinks that she's hot?
Yeah.
And that's – because I wasn't getting – I go, does he – he keeps staring at her. It wasn't until we see the gross scene that
– Yeah. So he goes to a brothel and he's examining these and Arya follows and examining the prostitutes. He keeps saying younger until I guess he gets like a maid – or not a maid, but one of the young cleaning girls.
That or a daughter –
It could have been her daughter
with a prostitute.
Yeah, it could have been
the prostitute. She seemed like a young girl.
Yeah, because she the shock was in her face, as in like what? Like because you think that maybe it was her daughter or maybe a cleaning girl because she clearly didn't know what she was going into the room for.
To me, that was the most upsetting scene in the whole episode.
Yeah, I agree too. Because
why do we need this? I know this guy's a bad guy. This is unless she's Arya's going to come back as a prostitute and kill him the next day or something like that as a young you have to kind of think, okay, what are they setting this up for something? Or are they just trying to make me sick to my stomach?
Yeah. This is a chapter that has not been published yet. Really. That's in the new book that will be out probably next year. So I know that this happens to some extent, but as to what, I don't know.
I know. I thought it was unnecessary. Unless again, it's going to lead to something else. Then. Okay.
Well, I just think it's showing again. I think this was probably something that happened during that time.
Well, I get that.
People married probably 13-year-olds back then.
But even the two guys he was with were looking cool.
Well, that happened 100 years ago. I mean, heck, even Jerry Lee Lewis
married 13-year-old. I think the other girls that were there are much hotter. I mean, there were some smoking girls. Those prostitutes he turned down.
Did you guys notice? I thought this what was really strange is as the other two guys that are with him are Lannister guards, and I thought that was the strangest thing. Like, why would two Lannister guards go to Braavos when they're protecting a Tyrell? Wouldn't Lord Tyrell bring his own soldiers? So I just thought that was really.
he doesn't seem too sharp, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's true. Mace just kind of seems like,
He's the guy. He's the Wizard of Oz. He's the guy that lets him into the Wizard of the House. Yeah.
The wizard? The wizard?
You want to see that?
That's a horse in a new coat.
How?
That's who the guy is. I'm telling you. He was frozen, and they brought him back alive.
Why did you say so? That's a horse of a different color.
I think they're sorry. They're like, oysters, clams, and cuckolds.
Follow the yellow brick road.
This is just turning into Mary Poppins or something.
Horrible Cockney accents. Is that
exactly. Yeah.
Anywho. So she kind of follows him there. She even comes in to because the guards want some oysters, clams, and cuckolds.
First it was one of the prostitutes wanted one.
Yeah. But she goes back to the house of White and Black, and Jack and Hagar questions her. She gives a lie, but I don't know if he believed it.
I don't think he did. I think he's way too smart for that. But yeah.
But was he happy that she came up with a lie?
Probably not, because I think of all people, he's the one she shouldn't lie to.
Yeah, exactly.
But hasn't he been training her to lie?
Yes.
Okay, so if she came up with a lie, and if you're teaching someone to hit a baseball,
but again,
and
she
they hit the even if you're pitching and they hit the baseball off you, you're
happy.
The whole
point is for her to become no one, and right now she is full on Arya Stark. Like there's
absolutely.
I get that. Yeah,
it is full on vengeance right now.
Yeah, and what will the consequences be if she's Arya Stark and not no one? Mm-hmm. You know, because right now she's whatever name she made up. Laura or something.
Yeah. I think it's just cuckolds.
Cuckolds, yeah.
Cuckolds.
You know, now it's getting worse.
She just wanted
to point that out. The accent's getting worse.
You
keep doing it because it's gold.
In interviews, you know, the actress says that, you know, everyone always wants her to say her list to them, you know, and then put your own name in there. So, but it's like, I guarantee from now on, everyone's going to be like, please say cuckolds. Just cuckolds.
Cuckolds.
We then have a scene between Doran and Ilaria, and he's not too happy with her attitude.
Yeah, but you know it was very short, but I liked it. You know, he's basically saying your rebellion is over. You know, and so you can either swear allegiance to me and do as I say, or you can die. Mm-hmm. And I'm always have a suspicious mind. I'm wondering if it was all an act because she does break down crying and she kisses his ring. You know, and then he says, I believe in second chances, but I do not believe in thirds. You know, so you're kind of wondering, is she going to turn over a new leaf, or is she still going to try to seek vengeance? So
vengeance.
Yeah.
She's a Stark.
No, we're talking about Ilara Sand.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. because, you know, the next scene, though, is still in that same vein of maybe she has turned over a new leaf. She goes and visits Jaime while he's trying to write a letter to Cersei. And she enters and inquires, you know, that Cersei will be pleased to know that her daughter's coming back. And he's like, yes, you know. And she's like, well, you love her, don't you? He's like, of course, she's my niece. And he's like, I'm not talking about your niece, you know. And she lets him know that, you know, she's not – don't be ashamed of loving your sister because it's – it's normal in Dorne, you know, and if he would have been, if he'd have been a Targaryen, then no one would have batted an eye of him loving his sister. So, and then she does kind of not necessarily forgives him, but like she says that, like, I know your daughter. She actually says that, like, you know, like, I know that Marcella is your daughter, had nothing to do with Oberyn's death. And perhaps even you didn't. So you kind of think, okay, maybe she won't go after Jaime and Bronn, but
well, he didn't have anything to do with the death.
No, he didn't.
He was rooting for him.
Yeah, I mean it's all her father. It's all his father. It was all Tywin. You know?
She did have a weird look at the end, though. Mm-hmm. She did leave it like, I don't know what she's thinking. So that was actually good writing there.
Then after that we have the horrible scene or the horrible scenes with Shireen and Stannis. Mm-hmm. And what happens?
I'll do anything for. Well, she did say she'd do anything. Yeah.
I know, but I don't want to spend too much time on all of this. But it's just a horrible, horrible scene.
Now, what about the people that are saying I didn't need to hear her yelling, her dad yelling for help?
Yeah,
I kind of agree. We knew what was happening, but did that give it more?
It gave more realism. Like, more if realism. I was up there, I'd be like, get me the F out of here. So, I mean, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, but she, you know, she, please, please, and she's begging for her life. And even the mom, at first, go, this finally, is a good thing, this mother. Is a good thing. And then she goes at the last second, okay, I better go do something.
Yeah.
And she stopped.
Yeah. Before that, all that happens, though, when they're in the tent, I think a lot of people probably don't pay attention to it because you know what's going to happen anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once again, he comes in and asks her what she's reading. She says, I'm reading The Dance of the Dragons. And she tells him about the Targaryens fighting, you know, brother and brother, family against family, which is a parallel between what he just did, which is Stannis killing his own brother, Renly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, you know, that it tore the kingdom in two, and it was a disaster. So basically, she's saying that power corrupts. And this is kind of what we're seeing in Stannis, you know, like, because he's asking, who would you have chosen? And she said, I wouldn't have chosen either one of them. Because once you choose sides, you know, that's when the loss of life, you know, the evilness will come out of it. To which Stannis is saying, well, sometimes you don't have a choice. And, you know, you have to fulfill your destiny. So you can see it right there that he's already kind of obsessed. That's the way the writers of the TV show are saying it, that he's obsessed with getting fulfilling his destiny, that he truly believes it's his right to be king. So now he's crossed that line of I am king, I'll do anything to fulfill that destiny. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, he still does care a little bit. I mean, he does whisper forgive me, but yeah, he takes her to Mercy.
Well, that was the scene a few weeks ago where he has that he tells about how he tried to get her cured and he cared about her so much, I guess to make us feel that it was going to be worse when he actually did have to kill her.
Yeah. Well, that's what a lot of people know that are mad about this because, you know, they've shown him being cold and callous for 3-4 seasons now. And then This season they build him up as this almost father-like warm character just to just say, oh, heck of that. Let's burn her.
Yeah. I kept waiting for him to say no. I kept thinking, okay, this is not going to happen. But then when they pulled away from her and weren't showing her, just her, you know, you hear her screaming for, you know, her life. Like, oh, my God, they're going through with it. Anyway, it was a terrible scene.
Yeah, and you see her mom, who in the books, well, her mom is, I mean, they do are okay on the show, but like her mom is really the more devoted to the Lord of Light than Stannis is. Stannis just uses it as a means to become king, but Selyse is the one that's, you know, I don't care about her. Like, it's all about the Lord of Light, and she's the one in the show that has all of a sudden the second thoughts, and it's like, no, I can't let my child burn, of course, but she didn't put too much of a fight up, though. But
yeah. No.
No.
That's it for Shireen and Stannis. I think, you know, has made his deal with the devil and there's no going back.
Even if you become king, say I don't see it happening now. How do you live with yourself at that?
That's what I'm saying. What thing is ever worth that?
No,
exactly.
But again, like I said, I saw people on Twitter who, you know, were all Team Stannis and now they're no.
I don't know how you could be now.
I don't think Nick said earlier, a lot of people, we were actually kind of rooting for him. Mm. You know, kind of rooting for him. Now it's like, okay, he's going against, you know, I want to see him die.
Yeah. I mean, I'll get into this a little bit more in the book section. But
okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
So let's go over to Danny, who's over the game pit in Marine. And Danny has a very reluctant clap, and the games begin.
Yeah. To me, the interesting thing, though, is, like, you know, his daughter comes in a little late, you know, and she's like, where have you been? And he, you know, he writes, I'm just making sure everything's in order, which, to me, it was a bit suspicious.
Yeah.
So, and you kind of wonder, like, what's he putting in order?
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, but the first fight we see is between a large man and a small man in... I was wondering when they did this, like, because they proposed the question, who will win? Like, I was like, are they going to say Danny pick which one must die or what? But yeah, she says, no, just clap. So yeah, she claps to make the match begin, which you can see, like, she's really reluctant to do it because I don't think she wants anyone to die. I mean, to her, it's just horrible. It's like, I have to, you know.
Well, it's a waste of life.
It's a waste of life, yeah, to her, because exactly. She's like, I've fought for these people with their freedom, and they're just throwing away their lives for entertainment. So,
but this is like a little discussion about the who is better in tune to win, the big and bulky but slow, or the quick and nimble but not strong.
I had my money on the small guy too. So, yes. I was surprised. But yeah, you see a little bickering between Hisdar and Dario of kind of like a jealous, I'm the better man kind of pining for Dany's affection kind of thing. And you even see him like even intimidating him with his dagger a little bit, like, haha, I can stab you if I want to.
When I was in the pits.
Yeah.
Were you ever in the pits?
But then we see his head get cut off, which is always enjoyable. And then we go to a six-person...
Hold on a second. I watched Spartacus for 5 seasons. That was nothing to me. That was a walk in the park.
Then we go to a six-person melee with people from different areas, and Jorah appears. And
yeah. He didn't look too good, did he?
No, I thought he would have fought better. He's kind of crappy.
Either he was rusty or just...
emotional, maybe?
I don't know who's the fencing instructor or, you know, the stunts guy on this show, but like the fight scenes this season have not been that great, you know, but, you know, or maybe it's just,
like, he looked like an old man. He looked like
he did. Well, he was, that's how he was sold. Remember, he's like, what's this old man going to do? So yeah.
Again, I think even before that, when he like took out what those six people in the pit a week or so ago, you know, it's like, okay, he can fight. And this one, he just didn't appear.
Well, these guys are more professionals than those guys.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
Or did he not want to? Did he want to die?
That could be it too.
I don't think he wanted to die.
Well, we talked about it last week. What was his motivation for doing it?
Yeah, I think if he died, I think he wanted to show off that he could still be of value. But then if he died as well, I think he wanted Dany to cry out, you know, like, you know, stop it if he dies, because I think he wants her to admit that she loves him too, which I don't know if she does or doesn't. I don't think she does.
I think she loves him as a friend.
Friend zone.
I think he's in the friend zone, yeah.
What do they call him? They call him Captain Friendzone or Sir Friendzone or whatever.
Sir Friendzone.
I wanted to know where the other fighters were from. Did you guys, there's one from Marine, one Bravosi fighter, a Dothraki fighter, and then, of course, Jorah. And I didn't know what the other two were, though. I couldn't pick them out.
They were kind of saying it like as they're describing them at the beginning of the fight, but yeah, I don't remember all the people. So Jorah kills the man at the end of it.
Well, he got lucky though.
He did.
I do like how he kind of tipped his hat. He didn't have it. He kind of bowed to the guys that's, you know, killed the guy that was going to kill him. Then go, okay, now let's kill each other.
The Bravosi, you know, dancer, you know, just like Sirio, he's the guy that was going to kill him. He was just way better. He gets saved. Go ahead.
Jorah wins and he gets boos from the crowd, and Jorah picks up the spear and throws it in. I was like, why is he throwing the spear? And he actually kills the Son of the Harpy, and I guess now...
I knew something was going on with that.
And now Sons of Harpy kind of have their siege and kill Hisdar, which is interesting. So if he was planning this attack on her, it didn't work out too well for him.
I think he was, and I think they just double-crossed him.
Well, this is that's very possible too. But this is another. I'll get into this in the book section too. This is another thing where the writers, I think, were a little lazy and didn't know what to do with how to portray Hisdar in this scene and the Sons of Harpy and all that. And it's just kind of a confusion of things because, you know, I'll get into that later. But
okay,
it felt odd to me. With that, like killing him after he's saying that, and you're not quite sure, and then the Sons of the Harpy. Yeah, but I did love that though when they look up from the one Sons of the Harpy that gets killed, and then all of a sudden all of them are there. And you're just like, oh, that's really a cool shot.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look too well. I mean, there's so many of them, and Dany's just, it doesn't look well at all. She goes in the middle of the thing, and they're kind of surrounding, you know, in this melee, and poor. Tyrion's like, geez, what I got to do to get on a winning side here?
I can't catch a break.
But he does well in the fight because
he's a fighter.
Somebody almost kills Missandei, and he kills him first. So, you know, he did pretty good.
He's a lover and a fighter, so he's got that going for him.
And I think Dany realizes that, you know, her end is near. She holds Missandei's hand and kind of puts her head back. And I was like, I wonder if it's going to connect with the dragons, and then dragon will come up. And just as that happened, Drogon appears and lays waste to the Sons of the Harpy. It was a cool scene. Like, the dragon looked amazing, I thought.
Truly amazing. Yeah, the great CGI with him. I wondered why he had that hole in his wing. I was like, did the spear go through it? Did you guys notice that too?
Yes, I did see the hole in his wing.
There's two other things. Like, where was Grey Worm during this whole time? Which is something I was curious about. I guess he's still in bed.
He must be recovering still, yeah.
Yeah. And then also with Jorah touching Dany, grabbing her hand, it's like, well, wait a minute here. He's got grayscale. You know, like,
right.
Is he not afraid of infecting his queen?
Now, if it's not on his hand, it's only on his wrist, right?
That must be how it works, I would guess.
I think on the show that's how they're doing it. It has to be the actual infected area to spread it. But in the books, it's like it doesn't matter where. If you've got it, you're spreading it. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
But then she climbs on the back of the dragon and
butterfly in the sky. I can go twice as high.
I believe I can.
Take a now, look.
A lot of people didn't. A lot of people didn't like this scene.
Really.
A lot of people thought it was hokey.
Yeah, well, yeah, a little bit, and it's one of those.
I thought it was a little hokey, but I'm like going, okay, well.
But I thought it was cool in the sense that Tyrion, you kind of see Tyrion become a believer again. Like he's such a skeptic, or like a skeptic, and him seeing her fly away, I think he became a believer. That's what I
like. Someone said on our Facebook page, I thought he was thinking, "Hey, what about us?"
Exactly. Well, that's what I was about to say.
If you're getting somebody, we're back here.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Like, imagine, like, you're surrounded by people who are wanting to kill you, and then your queen, who you're trying to protect, just goes, "Oh, see you guys. I'm gonna jump on my dragon and fly away." And you're like, "Where are you going?" And I know I'd be a little mad. It's like, "Well, thanks." So
I knew it. Couldn't trust her.
Thanks, but no thanks.
There's a funny little, I think I put it up on the message boards too, like the picture where she's holding her hand, like, we're in this together. It's like, oh, Drogon's here, see ya. You know,
it's a Titanic all over again.
Yeah, there was room on that door.
Yeah. There was.
I think that was a Mythbusters, wasn't it, where they showed all the ways he could have stayed on the door?
He could have easily stayed on the door. I almost walked out of the movie theater when came up.
Well, I think for him, he saw that, okay, listen, I was thinking this is a fling, you know. We hook up a couple times. I go to New York. I, you know, move on with my life. But I'm thinking.
But he has to spend eternity with her.
But here's the thing. I think he then realized, like, oh my God, you're way more into this than I am. You know what? I'm just gonna die.
But who's stuck with her forever?
What are you talking? Right? Oh, so you're saying since she saw him when she died or whatever.
She comes at the what happens at the end.
Oh, at the end, yeah.
He's waiting for at the end of the spiral staircase.
Hallucination. You don't know if that's really, you know.
Because where was she? Was obviously had kids. Where was her other husband? She says, "I'll go with the guy I had a fling with."
It's the lost ending. That was her her 6 days on the boat were the whole purpose of her life. You know?
Yes.
Well, maybe he didn't know that was it. So like he dies and he goes instantly to that. And he's like, "Oh, darn it."
Come on, I can't get off this boat.
And maybe he's just in an infinite loop where he just keeps killing himself and keeps going into that over and over and over again. How many times have I got to freeze to death here?
Jeez.
All right, this time's going to work for sure. I'm sure of it.
But, you know, she gets that whistle going pretty good, though, doesn't she? Is anyone out there?
Anyway,
is anyone alive?
So you both think the Drogon flyaway scene was hokey?
I said a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. And you could
I went with it, but I thought it was a little hokey. It looked like you said the CGI. I thought was pretty good.
I think the CGI.
Cool.
It's better than a submarine in Lost. But
The CGI with Drogon in the arena I thought was really good, but when she was actually flying away on him, you could tell that it was a little fake.
Oh, you could tell, yeah. But that kind of got, wow, is she really going to fly away? But like I said, I was more concerned. I go, what about the other people?
She's going to come back and get them. She can't put them all on her back.
Unless I thought she was going to fly around just like and have them burn the people as she's flying around, because that seemed to be the theme of the show episode. But it's just like, she's just flying
away.
Maybe
that's what she does. The scene ends there, so. You know, there's a lot that can happen, but
she's going to free the other two dragons.
Well,
maybe
I like the sense that she is kind of taking. She took that step, another step closer to kind of becoming that Targaryen ruler.
Okay. Yeah, it's true because not just anyone can ride a dragon. Mm-hmm. You have to be almost have that kind of Valyrian blood in you to withstand the heat that comes off a dragon. Mm-hmm. So
makes sense, yeah.
And that is one of those fan theories that people love, like, because a dragon always has to have three heads, you know, the Targaryen symbol. And so people are always like, well, who's going to be the other two dragon riders? So, yeah, to ride the other two. So it's one of those questions that people love to debate.
I think maybe one of them, I'll wait.
Yes. Anywho, that closes out the episode. This season has had its ups and downs and controversies and all that kind of stuff. What would you say overall for the episode? Would you say thumbs up or thumbs down or meh? I'm gathering a meh from our panel here of people.
Yeah, I gave it a thumbs up.
Yeah, as a show watcher, I enjoyed it. I was entertained. But as a book reader, I was a little mad about it. So I was glad that we waited a couple of days to this. I was a little mad on Sunday night. So I cooled down. The smoke kind of cleared.
Listen, whenever you're feeling mad, just think about Arya going, oysters, clams, and
cuckoo. This brings you a smile to your day.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, I've looked up a cuckold, and I've heard about forests, but it's like that whole, you know, cuckolding, like a guy letting somebody else have his wife or whatever. But there's nothing about like some type of, you know, sea fish that they sell. Like, I can't.
Well, isn't that what in Alice in Wonderland? Isn't that what they're in their cuckolds in Alice in Wonderland? It's like the pelicans on top of the rock, and there's two cuckolds.
It's a type of bird. It's a cuckoo bird. Oh, is it? Okay. Well, cuckold derives from the cuckoo bird.
Oh, okay. Well, then I have no idea.
Still not eating it. I'm gonna pass. Well, I thought it wasn't as good as the episode of the week before.
Mm-hmm. No,
but I thought it was a good episode. I enjoyed it. It always goes fast. You're always going, oh, it's over already. It's a few hokey scenes. Like I said, I didn't like the burning of the child. I didn't like that. But now I can no longer root for Stannis. And like I said, I had a kind of I can root for him. I can see him as king. He's got that kind of king attitude. Mm-hmm. Now he's just a jerk.
Yeah. Well, the rumors are that episode 10 will break the internet. So.
Oh.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Let's get into our listener feedback.
Kim Kardashian's going to be on it.
So you're telling me there's going to be that booty, is what we're, I guess, is basically going to happen.
Got to get the wide lens out.
The booty's going to be riding the dragon.
Anywho, let's go to our listener feedback. Let's go to our first set of three calls. Here we go.
Hey, this is Brad in Chicago. I have a general comment and then a question and then a crackpot theory. Not episode specific, so you could play this anytime. First thing is maybe a question on the time frame. So how many years has it been since season one started through now? I'm kind of curious how long winter has been coming. If any of you guys know that, that would be fantastic. The other thing, I have a crackpot theory. I think Bran Stark, I think he's going to come back in the final episode. They made a point saying they weren't going to follow his storyline this season, but I think it would be a great surprise if somehow in one of the last scenes he comes and saves the day, helping out with the White any White Walker battles that may be coming since winter is now here, it looks like. So that's just crackpot theory, and I'm sticking to it. Okay, thanks. And I love your Game of Thrones podcast. It's fantastic. Love all the intricacies about the differences between the books. That's my favorite part. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Jay and Jack. This is Anthony from New Jersey. I want to give my crackpot theory for Game of Thrones. My theory is that this was all just a test for Stannis from the Lord of Light, and that not only will Shireen be alive, but when she comes out of the fire, she will be cured from her grayscale. So that's my crackpot theory, and I'm sticking to it.
Hey, guys. It's Jeff from Wiley. Just wanted to say a pretty incredible episode last night. And I just wanted to mention, I got to watch the episode from your own stopping ground, San Diego. I'm here for the big Cisco event this week. So anyway, I'll try and hit some of your old haunts while I'm here. But once again, great episode. Just wanted to check in.
All right. Thank you for those calls.
We're all. You're going to be in San Diego in a few weeks, right, Nick? You're going to be at Comic-Con?
Yeah.
We'll all be in San Diego soon.
Comic-Con. Right, yes, we will.
Comic-Con. Yeah.
Can't wait to get back to San Diego, California. Of course, Game of Thrones will be over by then.
Discovered in 1904 by the Germans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think of the theory that she comes out and she's...
Yeah, I've heard that once before too, that she's Ash and that she might rise like a, I don't know, like a phoenix or something, but it's a bit far-fetched. I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, if she does, do we go, okay, we're back on Team Stannis?
He did it thinking that she would be burned alive for his
exactly.
own pain, so I don't
yeah,
know.
So he's still cruel.
Does she come back and then kill Stannis?
I wouldn't blame her.
So is it like a ring, the ring kind of thing? Like,
yeah, there you go.
She's the new Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah. and what about Brad? The time frame.
The time frame. Yeah, yeah. George R. R. Martin has always said that he doesn't really care about time. Because like I know a lot of people will nitpick over distances because they've said that like it takes 6 months to come from King's Landing to Winterfell, but then like you see on the show where literally Littlefinger left in the episode prior and is there in King's Landing the next episode and it's been like a week. So it's hard to pin that down, but I would say since book one, it's roughly probably 4 years.
During the theme song, it doesn't seem to take that long at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a... You can't read a map, so
okay. I can't. It just seems quick to me. I don't.
I do like the pictures though. It's real nice.
Those are real tall buildings.
Yeah, stick with the southern accent and keep the Cockney ones out.
That's not a southern accent at all. I don't know what that is.
It's like a mutated Gomer Pyle.
That's a Gomer Pyle type of accent, wasn't it?
Well,
come on,
surprise.
Oh, and then Bran in the final episode. It's totally possible.
Would that break the internet?
No, of course not.
No?
I think he won't reappear until next season just because it made sense to skip him this season because he's being trained by Lord Bloodraven in the tree. So
tree guy?
Yeah, the tree guy. So, this season would have just been like, kind of like a Yoda with Luke kind of thing in Empire Strikes Back. Just
now, we're not going to see him for a whole season. What's he going to look like? What's he going to look like when he comes back?
I'm sure he'll be a lot bigger guy, but that's the kind of the benefit, I guess, of just being a handicapped character is that you can still kind of pull off him being small because he's not standing up. But he blew up though after like season two. He pulled a Walt. Had a growth spurt. So.
And Brad's favorite part is the book section.
Ah, yes. Thank you. Appreciate that.
It's my favorite part.
So I think Brad is actually, I'm about to say.
Wait, what?
What? No. Team Nick. He's Team Nick.
I thought it was actually Nick pretending to be Brad.
Oh, okay.
That's
all right. Hashtag Team Nick. All right. You guys ready for the next set of calls?
Yes. Sure.
All right, here we go.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Nick. It's Chuck in Houston. Just calling about last night's episode of Game of Thrones. Oh my gosh. That scene with Davos and Shireen, like, I just kept wanting him to, like, kidnap her or something, because you just knew it was going to end badly ever since Stannis had that, like, daddy-daughter conversation with her. You just knew it was going to end badly. And I guess Stannis sent him back to Castle Black, not so much to get supplies, but just to get him out of the way. Because I think he knew that Davos would have tried to stop him from doing what he was doing. That scene was just, oh my gosh, it killed me. Man, anyways, I just wanted to share that because this is like therapy because this show is so intense. Anyways, thanks, y'all. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, Jay and Jack and Nick. This is for Game of Thrones podcast. This is Brad from Chicago. This may be more for the book comparison, but I'm curious how far the book is with respect to Meereen and what happens there. And then same thing with what happens with burning Stannis' child. My prediction, and I haven't read the book, so this is just a crackpot theory, is that Stannis doesn't win, Ramsay doesn't win. What happens is Stannis'
Hand of the King, who's going up to the wall. He brings back John and the other free folk, and John and his guys, instead of feeding them, they end up defeating everybody once they find out, you know, what's going on at Winterfell. So that's kind of my prediction, but I'm kind of curious where we're at with respect to what's been published as well. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Hi, guys. It's Eckhart from Bethesda. Just two quick comments / questions on this last week's episode of Game of Thrones. Number one, I was wondering, Nick, in the books, how does Stannis actually supply both his army and maintain control of his regions if they're separated by such a large distance? And then number two, this is a comment. I thought that actually the highlight for me in this episode was to see Jaime Lannister just negotiate both his release, his daughter's release, an alliance with Dorne, as well as to see Bronn get slapped but still keep his life. So in many ways, I thought this was almost like a nicer, more comical version of his father, Tywin. So I would love to see them develop that character further this way and away from the tragic quasi-hero to more of the shrewd negotiator and statesman. Thanks, Spike.
All right, thank you for those calls.
So, Nick, what do you think?
What, with Eckhart? What did he say?
Yeah, what did he
Jamie being more of the
the part about the books.
Well, I mean, should I answer stuff books here?
Should we wait for the book section? We'll be right after this anyway.
But I do agree with him about Jamie. He was more in control and they did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, you should see an evolution of Jamie's character, and I think they've done it very subtly throughout the show, because you hate Jamie season one and season two, and then now you're almost rooting for him. You know, you're sympathetic to him because he's – especially you see that change in him with Brienne, of how he – once he loses his hand, he loses the ego, and he starts sympathizing with Brienne. He just see the humanistic part of him come out. So it's, I think they've done a really good job with Jamie in the show.
And the next one is Brad. That's more of a book question.
Right.
And then so Chuck. Yeah, I agree. It was a tough scene to watch.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, without further ado, thank you for the calls, first of all. I really appreciate it. Actually, we do have an email as well. I almost forgot. That's my bad. It's my bad, ladies and gentlemen. That's on me. We go to the email here, and then we'll go to what happens in the book stays in the book. I was getting too excited. This one is from...
What are you getting excited for?
What happens in the book stays in the book.
Oh, okay.
Brad's favorite section. This is from...
I thought we were doing something else over there.
Gav, what if the White Walkers were the ones who built the wall? It said that... Bran, the builder, built the wall with the help of children of the forest with giants and magic to keep the White Walkers out. But we already know that the stories talked about in the books aren't entirely true. For example, anyone's a Stark or a Baratheon follower will tell you how Rhaegar Targaryen kidnapped Lyanna Stark and raped her and kept her prisoner. Is what started Robert's Rebellion. But listen to the likes of Baris and Selmy and other Targaryen lovers. They'll tell you that Rhaegar and Lyanna ran away together and they were much in love. Rhaegar didn't fancy the woman, Lyanna Martell, that he was arranged to marry, but fell for Lyanna at a tournament. Far from being a fighter and a warrior, although very good at it, Rhaegar Targaryen was actually quite the lover and romantic who loved the sport of jousting, not the killing of war. Lyanna fell in love with Rhaegar, and he was opposite of Robert Baratheon, whose womanizing and heavy drinking pretty much disgusted Lyanna. So is it possible that the story of Bran the Builder building the wall is just another fabricated story about the wall? And it was actually created by the White Walkers to keep man out and away from them? ?
I like that theory.
Think about it. Mance Rayder has managed to unite all the wildlings and seemingly created an army of thousands. Could this be seen by the Walkers as a threat by man? After thousands of years of peace, all of a sudden there's an army of thousands in what they consider their territory. What is the ultimate game for the White Walkers? What do they want? Gav from the UK.
The thing about Game of Thrones is, and history in general, is that there's always two sides or more sides to everything. And when you read Game of Thrones, it's not like a typical chapter, like chapter one, chapter two. Each chapter is a point of view chapter. So you're seeing it from that person's eyes and their opinion. And just because you say it one way, it doesn't mean I can't say it another way. So it's clearly said that, yeah, the wall was built by giants, children of the forest, and men to protect them from the others, which are the White Walkers. And I always think of the White Walkers more like kind of like bears. You know, they go into hibernation for a long period of time, and then when they come out, you know, they're here to kill and get their food. But to me, they're out for blood. You know, they're here just to bring darkness upon the world, and if they succeed, great. But this land, Westeros, was like a magical area where humans didn't live for a long time. So basically, when humans kind of started to settle Westeros was when the first time and the only time that they saw them. Up to that point, the White Walkers were always defeated by the Children of the Forest and just the natural elements of the land. And so when man came, it threw everything out of balance. So that's how I choose to see it.
But it's very realistic, maybe allegorical to the real world, possibly.
Yes.
Well, very cool. Anything else you want to talk about that email?
Wait, wasn't there? Oh, there was a question in a caller six, and he wanted to know how does Stannis supply and keep control? That is in the books. Well, one, he doesn't. None of his supplies are burnt or anything in the books, but he still is. The winter has come, and his people are still starving. So that is true in the show as well. They start eating the horses, and they even start cannibalism a little bit as well. But he also does get a lot of help from Northmen tribes and mountain people who know how to hunt and know how to get their own food. So they do have help here and there. And it's really just a patch army of many different factions that are aligned with Stannis. So, and then he also, the Bank of Braavos as well, visits him because they recognize him as the king more than they do the Lannisters at this point.
Okay.
So.
Very good. All right. Well, without further ado, it's now time for What Happens in the Book Stays in the Book, the section in which our Game of Thrones researcher, theorist, and historian, Nick, will look through the differences between this episode of the TV show and the book. Nick, take it away.
All right. Well, this one I wrote a lot. Not a whole lot, but more than normal. Because this episode, to me, was the first true middle finger to book readers from the show writers. And it was mostly concerned with Stannis because they assassinated his character because in the books, and that's why he has so many fans, is that Stannis is not – he is a callous and calculating man, but he's not a cruel man. The only people he burns in the book are criminals or people who are not faithful to the Lord of Light. And he does it just to sacrifice to get, you know, as a sacrifice to his God. So everything he does is just – it's just according to him, you know. And repeatedly he has said with like the Braavos to people who were coming in to seek his counsel because he is the king. He makes a deal with the Bank of Braavos like, buy me sell swords, bring me food, do all these things, and I will pay the Braavos Bank back when I become king. He is being a legislator. But he constantly says, even if I die in the Battle of Winterfell, my heir is Shireen Baratheon. She's the only member of my line. So you can't see him, when he says that in the books, wanting to kill her. It right. makes no sense because he does care for his daughter. It's the only thing he cares for. But the writers of the show have said that George R. R. Martin told them that Shireen does die. But they didn't tell – he didn't tell them how she died. They just know that she died. So they kind of just said, oh – this is what I'm saying. Like I thought it was lazy. It's like, oh, well, let's just throw her down there and have Melisandre just burn her. And they deliberately did it. And that's what made a lot of people mad, is that in the books, Shireen's, the Queen's, Selyse and Melisandre are at the wall still. They're not with Stannis frozen in winter. So if Shireen dies in this next book, it's not going to be by Stannis' hand. It'll be by Melisandre burning her at the wall. So that's why a lot of people are mad about it. It's like, oh, well, she's not with Stannis right now, so it makes no sense. Like, I could see it where she dies and then he finds out about it and it makes him mad. But I don't think Stannis would ever purposely kill his own daughter. So that,
and people are mad because Stannis was, like you said, a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
And now he just did something completely out of character because the HBO writers did it.
Right. The HBO writers deliberately did it. I mean, they skipped over him recruiting in the North. They skipped over all the good things he did in the North and just showed the awfulness of it. And it made a lot of people, including me, mad, because I have lots of friends that are rooting for Stannis to be the king. So now, according to the show, like we said, you can't root for him anymore because he's just a horrible person. So now who do you root for when it comes to the Battle of Winterfell? I mean, do you root for the Boltons or do you root for Stannis? Either way, it's like, oh, they're both scumbags. Who cares?
Yeah. You kind of root for Sansa, really. You root for both of them just to end up killing each other and then Sansa being left.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Stannis was not going to win in the long run anyway. And they've shown this throughout the series, how power corrupts and how people think they have power through different motivations. I mean, you have Robert Baratheon, who was a great warrior, but he's an incompetent leader. You have Joffrey, who was an entitled little prick. You know, you have so many people who are obsessed with power who don't deserve it. And Stannis is no different. You know, I mean, he is a straight-laced, right and wrong kind of guy. But you're seeing that now, especially in the show, how he feels entitled that this throne is his and he's going to get it by hook or crook. So, I mean, he orchestrated the death of his brother. You know, you see that. And then you see him, even though he lost the advantage at the Battle of the Blackwater, he still pursued on. But those things were, you know, out of his control. But this was deliberate, so that's why it fired me up. So
you can even see his soldiers were shocked that it was happening.
Yeah, and I kind of expected some of them to go. And that's what I mean. Like, it doesn't matter how loyal I am to somebody. If I was in that situation where I see a guy burn his own daughter, it's like, well, how? What's he going to do to me then? You know,
exactly.
Like, I'm not going to. And that's what I'm saying. Like. That and Renly says it in season two, you know, that he inspires no devotion inspiration, I guess. And that's the main, like, that would just be the hugest demoralizer to me as a soldier, just to, like, oh my God, you're killing your own daughter. But
it's not just that, the way it was done.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where the way you explain it I can see why the readers are so upset.
Yeah.
For sure. What about the epic scene with Daenerys Targaryen and at the fighting pit? Is that from the book or?
Hold on. I'll say that. So, I'll say that one for the end. But yeah, the rest of those are pretty small changes. Like in Dorne, Trystane is still a child, like I said earlier, along with Marcella. So it's not him that gets sent to be on the small council. It's his older sister, Nymeria, who is not on the show, and I don't know why, because she's a great character. But so that's like the only difference there, really. And of course, you know, Bronn and Jaime aren't down in Dorne. The Arya scenes are a combination of sorts from two different chapters. One is an actual chapter where her first assassination attempt is with the Thin Man, which hopefully they will still continue this, maybe. If not this season, the next episode, maybe the next season, because it is an interesting way she does it. And then the other thing with Meryn Trant, it's not Meryn Trant in the books. It's a character named Roth the Sweetling, who is the guy in season two who stabs Lomi through the throat with the little sword there, who she killed like last season to get Needle back. So, but this is in keeping with the books a little bit. Just they changed the character because they already killed him off on the show. But yeah, like okay, I can't tell what happens next because it'll probably happen next episode. And then John, of course, like I said to you guys last week, this is why they showed them approaching the wall, because he sent the King of the North. They sent his wife, Val, north to bring back them, the wildlings, and then they approached the wall. And then John, of course, was still at the wall and said, okay, open the gates up. And that's kind of how they're echoing it. But that's what I'm saying. It's one of those things where they changed the scene because they sent John to Hardhome, but yet they kept the book scene where, like, oh, they're at the gate, and they just paused there. So it's like, well, if you already changed one thing, then just keep changing it to make it to where it makes sense. Don't just – another thing of just lazy writing to me. But okay. All right, and then as you requested, Maureen in the books, I like the way – this is another example of this season of where it's just lazy writing by the show producers. It's really drawn out in the books to where all of this is a mystery. You don't know who is running Maureen. You know, Danny is in control, but there's a lot of people conspiring against her. And so when she agrees to marry his Dar, like I told you guys earlier, he agrees that if you marry me, all the attacks from Sons of the Harpy will end. They will cease, you know, and they do. And so when they go to the tournament, they're already married. And this tournament is more like a celebration of the union between the people of Maureen and her, like, you know, powers together. And so that's that's why when he comes there and he goes, just making sure everything's in order, you're kind of already going, oh, you know, like, what's up? And what happens in the books is the same as, you know, she doesn't like the bloodshed. She gets uncomfortable. But then all of a sudden, one of the other characters that's not in the show as well, he's eating these foods that are all around him, and he starts to get poisoned, which freaks her out because someone is trying to kill her, and you don't know who it is, and you still don't know who it is. And then the fight that's happening within the pits is a woman and a boar fighting a boar, and the boar wins. And so the smell of blood and all this, that's when Drogon shows up at the exact same time that she's freaking out over the poisoning. Drogon shows up and roasts this boar and roasts the dead girl and starts eating the woman and the boar, to which all the people in the crowd start freaking out and running. And Dany jumps into the pits because the soldiers that are guarding the arena have started throwing spears and things at Drogon. And she goes to try to save his life and jumps on his back and flies away. Which is not as, you know, theatrical as the show, which is pretty neat.
So there's no Sons of Harpy?
There's no Sons of the Harpy, exactly. Because he already put that to an end. You know, because like that's what makes you believe it, is that he's behind it. Because he is now her husband. He stopped the Sons of the Harpy. Is it him that tried to poison her? You don't know. Because, like, if he poisoned her, now he's the king, you know, with three dragons. So it makes sense. You're like, you're suspicious of him. But, of course, the show killed him. So you're like, okay, well, that's not true now.
I still think he was part of it.
Yeah. So it leaves you with that suspicion. Like, this whole time you've been like, who is behind the Sons of the Harpy? Who's, you know, trying to kill Danny? You're not quite sure. And to me, that mystery is a way better than what they showed of just like, oh, these guys are just here to kill her. I mean, it is entertaining for one episode, but I like the mystery behind it all, because it's all that slow burn of like someone revealing like, haha, I was close to you this whole time, you know, and I'm trying to kill you.
Do you think they're changing it just to keep the show? Because why do you think they're changing it up?
I think one, because they're compressed by the 10 episode arc that they try to do.
Right.
And I think also from following books 1 through 3 fairly close, they're trying to keep that shock value of action and death in that episode 9 and 10 theme that they've done. And I think they probably were a little scared that if they just did a simple poisoning and then her flying away, that people would have been like, oh, that's lame. You know? So.
Well, they have set the bar kind of too high, I think. I mean, how do you keep topping it? I don't see how you can keep topping.
But again, I think you have to have the courage to not necessarily fall into this, well, episode 9, this has to happen. You have to maybe just let the story unfold the best way it can unfold. Because, I mean, honestly, with the, you know, just amazingness of episode 8 this season, I don't think you necessarily needed to have, like, a, oh, my God, episode 9. But You should feel free to just let the story be the best story possible. And
I agree, but I was waiting to see who was going to die. Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people were like going, okay, who's going to die?
But you see also like where I'm saying with the show versus the books, them all being surrounded by these soldiers now and then her leaving is kind of like a what the hell kind of moment, because these guys can still die. But in the books, it was just this one little threat of poisoning and there's no threat to any of them, just to Danny. So she flies away knowing that they'll be okay, well, for the most part. Whereas in this one, it kind of left it open, like, you're really a bad leader. You just left all your most loyal people to die. So
yeah, unless her leaving, they stop fighting.
Yeah, I mean, you did see when the dragon showed up, a lot of them ran away, the Sons of the Harpy. But it just, to me, was kind of...
They were still outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll have to wait until next week to see.
Yeah. And then little things else, like... Jorah, of course, doesn't fight in the pits. There's actually a siege of Meereen at the same time going on from and I don't know if they'll do it next season or not. They could. The one of the cities that she conquered, the first one, they've had an uprising, and these people decide to make their own army and march on Meereen, and he's part of that army. He's sold into slavery. so there's kind of like a battle within the city and a battle outside the city awaiting to happen at the end of book five.
All right.
And, of course, Tyrion is inside the pits, but he's jousting another dwarf on a pig. And then when Drogon shows up, he's just rushed away inside the pit. So he hasn't met Dany yet at the end of book five.
Okay.
But that's pretty much the it. I mean, the setting and the outcome is still the same, but just how they got there was different. And it, to me, I just felt the book was better in this situation. And that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, very good. We are now to the this coming Sunday, the last episode of this season of Game of Thrones, possibly the second to last season of Game of Thrones if they do season 6 and season 7. But we'll have to see what happens. As Nick said earlier, this episode is supposed to break the internet. So
have they come up with a timeline where they're going to, have they said seven seasons and we're done?
Well, I know that, yeah, the producers kind of wanted to do that seven, you know, there's seven, you know, seven pointing stars, seven gods, seven kingdoms, so seven right. Seasons just sounds right. But, you know, George R. R. Martin kind of thought that too, but he's always said, like, well, if it takes 8 books or it takes 9 books, it takes what it takes. You know, stories can always evolve.
I mean, if it's still popular,
well, paychecks, you know, they can change things, so.
Oh, hold on, and then to answer Brad's question, because I wasn't sure if I got back to it or not, but I guess, yeah, I kind of did. But, yeah, like the books now are with Meereen and Dany's story, it's almost exactly at the very end of the books now. There's going to be one more thing that we'll see next episode with Dany, and then they'll be fully caught up with the books, with Dany's story. And then I answered his question about Stannis. So, okay.
Okay.
Make sure I covered all my bases.
Very good. Very good.
Way to go, Nick.
Nick. All right. Well, that is it for this week's Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. Give us a call at 206-309-0311.
Call me, Jack.
206-309-0311. Also, give us an email at lostpodcast@gmail.com.
Lostpodcast.
Well, this has been on the Lost feed, so it works. And also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJackGroup for fun TV show discussions, including Game of Thrones, where Nick adds some more insights into that thread as well, which is nice.
And eventually there's going to be another Lost podcast.
There will. There will.
We talked about it the other day. So.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
We're getting motivated.
All right, guys. That is it for this week. Thank you again. And we'll see you guys next week. Hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.